welcome to the Visual Div. How are you doing, Matt?
I'm very good, Alan. How are you?
Yeah, good. Good. I'm late. I'm late for a really important podcast. Because I just flew in from the UK. I was over at a rugby match. My buddy... So, I'm getting married in 2 weeks' time, and I didn't have a stag. So my buddy bought me flights on Wednesday to leave Ireland on Friday at midnight to go over to Birmingham to go to a Munster rugby match without tickets. Completely unplanned. And I just came home there half an hour ago. So yeah, it was a good weekend. Got tickets. I'm pretty tired. Munster lost, so I'm pretty sad as well. But this podcast is going to cheer me up. Because we got the wonderful Alessia from Code and Wander here with us. How are you
Hello
doing?
Hello. I'm good, thanks. How are you guys?
Yeah, good. As I said, I'm tired, but I'm pretty good. I'm not as tired as I would have been. Maybe I'm as tired as I would have been if I went to the Webfail meetup. That kind of standard.
Yeah, I missed you guys.
I know. Yeah, I know. I was super keen to go. And then I was like, I'm not traveling anywhere before the wedding. And lo and behold, I flew over to Birmingham this weekend.
Well, it was a year ago that I remember we were standing outside a random pub in Shoreditch, all trying to get taxis. And we'd kind of only really all met each other that night.
Yeah.
It was like a group of old friends trying to go, oh, yeah, here's your taxi. And sending people off to different places. And then... Yeah,
and someone's phone battery went off. So I was like, oh, can you get me a taxi? And then I'll wire you the money. And then where do you need to go? Oh, no, I can't take two taxis. Yeah.
Yeah, we sent Ben off to North London on my Uber account. So then I couldn't flag down another Uber account. I was like, and Alien, I don't think you had Uber. Or you had it, but you didn't have it like a UK version.
Collectively, Vanessa and I had an Uber account, so I downloaded Vanessa's Uber account. And then, yeah, the taxi driver turns up and he's like, Vanessa, and I'm like, yes. And he's like, really? So, yeah.
Yeah. But how was it? How was this year, Alessia? Because I know, like, it was I know Jack put a lot of effort into this one. He was quite nervous about it, but it was a little bit different from last year, wasn't it? A bit more... polished maybe, or
a little bit more organized, I think. Not that last year's wasn't, because Jack always does an amazing job with organizing
pizza,
everything.
Was there enough pizza this year? Because last year we got like about half a slice each. Like Alan and I were sharing pizza and we'd only met like 2 minutes ago.
Just eating from the same piece, from the same slice.
What's that moment in Lady and the Tramp?
Yeah.
And it was at that point where we decided to do a podcast.
Where it all began. Great.
Well, I'm glad it happened. There was, although I didn't actually have any because I was the first speaker up. So I was a bit nervous and I was running around and forgot to eat. But yeah, I've heard it was really good.
The pizza was good, or the whole event?
The pizza, but the event was very good as well. Yeah, there were four speakers, lots of drinks, pizza, people flying in from all over. Yeah, it was very nice.
Yeah, those meetups are great. They're really important, especially like, I don't know, we're kind of living, like, unless you're in a slightly different situation where you're in an office with like tons and tons of people, but like a lot of people are working by themselves. So these meetups are, they're good. They're good to put an avatar to a face.
Yeah.
Like with the last one last year, Alessia, you were like talking to me and I was like, Who are you? Your face isn't on Twitter.
Actually, it's because of you that I changed it to a picture, because you were like, oh my God, you're a real person. You're not an avatar.
Yeah, it's like, okay, a cartoon. You were the cartoon person. Like,
one of those Memoji things. So then I was like, okay, maybe it's time to change it to a proper picture and not just a cartoon.
Good stuff.
But yeah. Also because we all kind of live on Twitter, right? So we all know each other's avatar and we feel like we're friends, but we never met each other in real life. And those meetups is when it all comes together and it's like meeting old friends and it's really nice. Really love them.
Actually, that was the one thing that I remember from last year's meetup, Matt, is that there was like, I'd be talking to someone and they're like, is that Matt from Twitter? And I'm like, yeah. And they just like fly away from me. They were just like going straight over to you. I was like, ah, he's very popular.
I'm very Twitter popular. Yeah. I actually took a break the last month. I've discovered that Twitter was eating my brain every day. And, I had some harsh words with my, I didn't have the harsh words. My wife did. She said, like, hey, you're on your phone too much. I was thinking, okay, well, Twitter's one of these things. You know, I don't get many emails. It's not emails. You know, I don't have any other websites that I'm addicted to. And Twitter was number one. So I had to, like, do a hard cull. And it's, you know what? It's massively helped. I've built loads of little Duplo sets with my two-year-old. You know, I've done all sorts of random stuff that I wouldn't have done because I was glued to my Twitter on my phone. So, yeah, so I'm going to be less on there now and just be more of a listener than a engager, as it were.
Yeah, so. What I try and do is, because I could be the same, like I could easily, I'd be on tons of social media platforms, but especially like Twitter and LinkedIn, I find that easy to keep them between 9 and 5 because I see them as work, and I try to keep Twitter and LinkedIn to 9 to 5, and then I'll go and watch a rugby match at the weekend and I'll start giving out to people about rugby decisions on my, so I've actually curated my Twitter. It's like Webflow, development, rugby, and depending on which list I'm looking at, I'm doing different things.
But we get all of them. So the only posts I see now are you ranting about, like, that wasn't a try. Jesus. I came in here for a bit of peace and quiet, and now Aline's popping up saying, like, complaining about the referee.
How are you finding LinkedIn? I can't get into LinkedIn.
What I like about LinkedIn is everybody has the same objective. Everybody's working and working for business, and they're trying to generate business or promote themselves in a business sense. So I have found heaps of work through LinkedIn. It's the platform I found the most amount of work through. And your posts stay for very, very, very long time. Like 5 and 6 days later, you're still getting engagement. And I just find it less salesy. If that, even though I'm saying that, because everybody there is, they're not
on expecting. You're expecting the sale.
Yeah, they're not on there for entertainment, really. It might evolve in that sense, but like they're looking for ideas, and you know the way I see Twitter and like other ones is that like, hey, look at all these things, and then there's like a little hook or a hoodwink to try and get you into a sales funnel. Whereas with LinkedIn, it's just like, here's the work that I do, here are my opinions on different things. And through that, like you're getting a lot of active people DMing you. I'm getting a heap of people looking for work and a heap of people, quite a few people looking to work with me.
So nice.
I found it interesting.
But how do you do it, Alessia? Like with your code, you got your Code and Wonder hat on, and then you've got Alessia's hat on. Are they different hats in like a LinkedIn environment? Because you don't have them on Twitter, do you? You have Alessia's hat on Twitter. You don't really have a Code and Wonder.
There is a Code and Wonder account on Twitter. But I don't use it that much because I find for with business accounts, even on LinkedIn, like I would put the same post on the Code and Wonder page and on my personal page, and one would get, like the Code and Wonder would get 3 views and mine would get thousands. So I'm kind of like, what's the point posting as Code and Wonder? So I try to link the two when it makes sense. So if I'm sharing work that we did or Code and Wonder has news, then I'll use the Code and Wonder one. But I find I mostly use mine, to be honest. Tag the Code and Wonder one when it makes sense. But I guess I'm trying to grow the personal brand more just because it's easier I find, like, it gets more traction for some reason, and people connect with other people rather than companies, or at least that's what I've heard. So, I think
it's a tricky one, isn't it? Because, well, we I remember when we first started the podcast, we were going, right, we're going to do a pricing episode, and all that ties into this whole, like, freelancer versus studio of one versus an agency, like what you call yourselves and how you price things up, and, you know, like these unlimited things. It's like unlimited this, and there's one person behind it, and then people go, like me, go, ah, Design Joy, there's no way he can do 5 million in a year because there's only one person. And then I remember going to Fido and Patch as a studio and then thinking, right, I have to market Fido and Patch as a studio, even though it was just me plus anyone else I bought in to help me, but which on majority of projects wasn't that many people, you know. So, and then I've got, now it's me, but I don't want to change the domain or the name, and I still want to work for a company, and like all this kind of rat, it's just a mess, isn't it? You're just like, you don't know which way to turn, and I guess you default to, like Alan does, like default to being me, and then complain about the referee and the rugby at the weekend, just kind of like a bit of honesty and integrity to show that it is me. It's not, I'm not pretending to be a studio, you know? Yeah, it's hard work.
Well, I think it's nice though when you see things like people doing other things than just Webflow. Because like the reason I started using a lot of LinkedIn, and I went pretty hard marketing myself on Twitter, was I had a guy working for me and advising me and helping me do heaps of the content creation. And I felt like it was really powerful and returns were really good. But the, like what you're saying there, Matt, like it wasn't me. Like I'd be there, like, you know, looking up music stuff or I'd be looking up rugby stuff and commenting on it. And it's just like, oh, you know, it's nice, but is it actually valuable, because you're not getting a return based on your comments should be based on Webflow stuff, you know? So you have to be, yeah, it's a tough one. Like, are you trying to be you as you, or are you trying to be you as a Webflow dev, or you as a business person? And then are you trying to tie that in with your business? It's head melting, but I like seeing people who are real and being as real as they can be. Cause at the end of the day, we are promoting ourselves. Like, so it's not like we're not being complete angels, you know. We are trying. we're looking for something in return, which is usually business. But like as you said, Alessia, people do business with people, and
I guess that's the reason for maybe the two accounts. One, you can keep it strictly business and strictly like company related, and then the other one, I mean, like you say, it's you, right? So you go and watch the rugby, you go for a run, you go like do whatever you do on your day to day. So it's nice to see that and learn more about you as a person rather than, you know, just as a Webflow designer or developer.
Yeah, but I also get very jealous.
I'm just thinking, imagine the amount of work I've lost because people hate rugby.
Or the wrong team that you're supporting.
I don't get any work in Dublin anymore because I hate Leinster rugby.
Yeah, I didn't want to say that. You know, Munster's a big county, but there's only about 10 people live in Munster compared to, you know.
Not many of them know about Webflow. No.
You should pick your team strategically with, like, how many people.
Which team has the biggest following of rich people?
But anyway, talking about business. No, Alan, you're the host. I shouldn't be introducing the subject of the day.
Keep the flow.
I'll keep the question. Okay, keep the. what are we talking about today? Because like we got to talk about something other than LinkedIn, I suppose, because it's a Webflow podcast.
Well, I think there's many reasons I wanted Alessia on, but I think that Alessia was doing some seriously cool stuff with the custom element. And we did a pod about on it ages ago when it, like, you know, it was the secret custom element that no one really knew about. But there's been a lot of evolution in that particular element and how people are using it. And I just think it's fascinating because essentially it's just a piece of HTML, but we can do a lot with it. And Matt, you have found some pretty gnarly bugs with it. because of the direction that you were taking and things you were trying to do. And like, I found it incredibly powerful with using HTMX and using DAT attributes. And but I've also noticed some issues in terms of the editor. Like, you can't, I find it really hard. You can't edit the custom element in the editor the way you would if you had like a native link element or a form. Ooh. Yeah, so it actually, even though it's powerful, that particular thing, that particular issue, it makes it a little bit more tricky for your clients. So I literally only noticed that last week. Built out a form, HTMX form with a load of HTMX attributes, like pulling data from different parts of the web, well, pulling HTML from different parts of the Webflow site. And one of my colleagues noticed, not a spelling mistake, but like they just wanted consistency in the type, you know, cap everywhere to have a capital. And they went into the editor and they couldn't fix it. So they had to go into the CMS and they fixed it that way. But you know, that nice, easy use of the editor. Yeah, they weren't able to edit it there. So yeah, just found that out last week. But at the same time, I've created an amazing, powerful feature for them using HTMX and the custom element. And so why the custom element as a form or as a button is so powerful is that sometimes when I was using HTMX with just the form element, if it's submitted, it was submitting through the form post or the form get request. So it was actually, you're getting the response that you get from the form element that's built into the Webflow form, which I didn't want as a UX experience. I just wanted to be able to send the data or pull the data, and using the custom element form and changing it to a form tag, you don't have that native feature built in. So that's why I was finding it really cool.
Yeah, it is really cool. I'm only really using it for buttons and for figures actually at the moment, which is quite interesting. Like, because you know, you can't add a figure in Webflow unless you have a rich text, which is super interesting. So I've been using it for that, so people can put captions on. Like, I've got a client who is putting captions on images. It's like, oh, I could use this for that. And it's super easy. And then you put a component in and you can link it up. But the button one was interesting. I've submitted a few bugs and Webflow looking at it. But it's, yeah. Alessio, what magic can you report from your end in terms of how the custom element? Because there's some, they've changed something, what, this week? Or was it last week they released another? What did they release this week or last week?
So it wasn't the silent release of the attributes that you can use classes now as attribute.
Silent release. That's a good way to describe it.
That's the way they call it. First question, what do I use the custom attribute for? I mainly use it for inputs like ranges or like all the inputs that are not native to Webflow. And the other one that I recently used was the canvas, because I was using the Char.js, like third-party library. And when I was looking through the documentations and like step-by-step how to set it up, like one of the first steps was, create a canvas on the page. And I was like, great, I can just drag in the custom element, put canvas, step one done. It's those bits that before, when you look at documentations of other providers and you get all these like custom HTML or like HTML tags in, and you're like, oh, how am I gonna do this? I need to put drag and embed in and then try and like inject the code that way. Now you can you can directly put a custom element in.
That's nuts. So what, just explain a bit more there what we're doing. So I've never used a canvas element. So what was it that you were trying to, I didn't quite get what you were trying to pull in there.
So I think the canvas element just renders whatever you want to render on the page. So for this one in particular, I was using Char.js. So loading a chart, it could be a bar chart or a pie or whatever chart you're trying to do. And it requires that canvas, because then Chart.js does all the magic in the background and then renders the graph in the canvas.
Oh, so wow, that, cool. That's amazing.
That was it.
That's really interesting. That's so cool, because a lot of times, yeah, you'd have to do an embed, and you're almost like iframing those things, aren't you? And
yeah,
and there's issues with using iframe, especially with if you're trying to track your data. The iframe, a lot of things inside an iframes don't get they don't get recognized by your tracking software or analytical software.
Yeah, it's harder. You have to. Well, it depends. I think what you're loading. Some embeds don't allow to track data within it at all, and then there's other ones. I think HubSpot, you have like a little toggle that says, oh, for embedded forms, allow tracking or allow in iframe editing or whatever it is. So I think it depends by the provider of what you're trying to embed. But you're right, most of the time you can't really control what's inside the iframe. Mm. So that brings other headaches.
Another thing it does as well, which is pretty cool, I always think is, and sorry, Webflow, but it means you don't get the WF dash class appearing, because it's treated completely as a
completely
as a foreign foreign object, isn't it? So it's not general, like section, if you put section in, or container, you get these little hanger-on classes that you don't know what they're doing there. But it's definitely not, you know, it's definitely not optimum, and it's, you know, like, we're not going to lose sleep over it, but, you know, to be able to just pull in a canvas div or a, it's not a canvas div, it's a canvas element, and hook stuff up to it, it's pretty cool. What would be even cooler is if that rendered out in the designer as well. So you could have the JS executing somewhere that pulled it into the actual element in the designer. That would be amazing, rather than having to push it up to staging to execute the JS. That's in the roadmap. Most of them
appear, I think, if you're using the custom element, didn't they?
I think what Matt's trying to say there is that if you needed to, in the designer, JavaScript doesn't run. So if was something that needed JavaScript to run, like, I don't know, if the Chart.js needed JavaScript, it would be pretty awesome if you could, yeah, pull data in for those charts live and had them sitting there in your canvas. That would be it would be a nice update,
you know, like HTMX nice. That you mentioned there, it's just I've been working on an exam platform, so I'm storing all the questions off in Xano and pulling them into the DOM using HTMX. So I'm using HTMX to send request to Xano. Xano's returning all the HTML, and then boom, loaded on the screen. But I have to test that in a staging environment. Mm. And it's like, I can do, if I put up to staging, I can have Slater refresh, which is brilliant. Anything on Xano, I can have refresh, because I could just, you know, making a new call. But if that was in the designer, it would make things move that little bit more quickly, because I can visually do it, rather than at the moment I'm one step removed. I have to go back to Webflow and then, okay, this isn't quite working. And so if that comes along, and I guess with React and all that kind of stuff coming in with DevLink, maybe they will have some functionality to allow that to happen. So
hopefully, yeah. Because at the moment, I mean, most of the time, out of reflex, I just publish the staging just to test it. Because most of the stuff, like when a site comes to me, it's more custom code and making sure that, you know, all the intricacy are working. And you can't, like you said, you can't do that on just the preview. So you have to publish to staging. So out of reflex, nearly every time, I'm just like, okay, publish staging. Okay, let me check.
I'm definitely in the same boat there. Kind of feels like, I don't know, but if you don't have two screens or something, it really slows down my process. Because of that kind of approach, it's like publish staging, refresh the staging URL and see how we're going.
Oh yeah, I love having my second monitor. Like, I can't do anything with my second monitor in there, because yeah, it's nice to have two side by side.
I think like that, the feeling I got when I started Webflow was ridiculous in terms of the visual development that you could do. But I remember going back to when I did a coding boot camp years ago, 2011, I think it was. And the fact that you could be on your local machine in your code editor, I think I was using Sublime Text at the time, and you change something and you press save and it reloads in your browser. And that kind of experience was something that we still haven't got. We still haven't got it in Webflow, you know, where you can sort of, you press save and the browser refreshes itself. I can't remember what it was called, like auto reload, or you could have it set up, you know. And it's those little bits there that I feel like should be coming down the Webflow roadmap that would make it like it would move it into the mainstream a little bit more in terms of the development environment. Because I still speak to developers when I'm handing over sites, and you still have to kind of undo what they know about development environments and say, no, this is the Webflow way, is kind of you have to do this, this, and this. So it'd be interesting to see how far they come down that road. And because I know branching and stuff like that in enterprise, and, you know, we've covered why it'd be great to have branching or something like that in normal non-enterprise clients. But just having that little stuff, because the more we get into code and custom code and, you know, using Canvas and using JavaScript a lot more, which we're all doing, like GSAP is having a big boost now with people doing put little libraries on top of GSAP, then boom, like Webflow will get another little boost, you know, into the development world, which is pretty cool. So, but yeah, what is the secret though? What's the silent release? What's the silent release? Everyone's messaging me in privately going, what is the silent release?
So, you know, for attributes, before you couldn't add class as an attribute, it was a like banned name because it would clash with other things. So now you can add class as an attribute, which means that you can inject a class from the CMS, for example.
That's interesting. So we talked about this before, Matt, about it used to annoy it would frustrate me that, like, you can't use onClick. There's a heap of attributes that aren't, hypothesized that they were deep baked and into the Webflow code, that it was almost too big an issue to go and find them and remove that piece of code. But like, if they've freed up class, have you checked if they freed up other attributes? Because I would assume it's coming from the same place. That they don't want, they wouldn't let you put the attribute class in the custom attributes of an element, for example, but now you're able to put it into the custom attributes of a custom element. That's a tongue twister.
Yes.
I think I got it.
But why, why do you think they've done this? Because, like, I guess the only benefit I can see is that you can link it with a CMS value. So, because you can put a dynamic value into that attribute. But other than that, why allow that to happen? Because at the end of the day, you've got access to the class attribute up in the style. So why are they adding this in? It's like super interesting. And that's maybe why it was silent, because it's kind of part of a bigger release, maybe. I don't know.
Well, if you think about components, so I don't know if you ever did it where you add, background blue as a attribute, and then you have the custom CSS to target the attribute and not the class, so that you could have the same component and then style it differently depending on the variations or where it sits on the site. And before, or at least I tried it a few times, you would add the CSS to the attribute, so not a class. So yeah. Now, because you can add class to the custom attribute within components, you can just manually add the class name without having to style the attribute. Does that make any sense?
Yeah, it does. Yeah. That's class.
That's class.
Yeah, Matt, remember when Irish Ben was showing us first the stuff he was doing with padding? And he was using attributes and padding, and you've seen, like, Timothy Ricks has gone pretty mental down that route of adding styles to attributes. And then I saw that there was a new release or a recent release of a CSS framework. Was it Blueprint? Blueprint by Sam over in the UK?
Oh, yeah, Sam Harrison. Sam Harrison.
Yeah, yeah. Was it Blueprint? Was that the name of it?
Yeah,
Blueprint. And it was based on this idea of being able to have like one component that could be, you know, text left, image right, and it could swap over to image right, text left, or it could be a center based off of your control of the attributes, which is essentially using styles. But now, so people were doing it anyway. So I suppose Webflow have just been like, people are making workarounds to figure this stuff out. So let's make it easier for them by releasing the class.
Yeah. And I mean,
that's awesome.
At the conference, they announced slots, right, for components. Mm-hmm. So I wonder if something like component variants is in the books, kind of combined to that, and therefore you would need to free up class anyway, maybe? Mm,
maybe it's a part of the...
I don't know, it's all a guess.
It's good to speculate on it, though.
Well, I'm going to dive in and see where this comes in with the whole cascade and the hierarchy. Because if you've got, you know, I don't know, background blue as a class in the style, and then you put background red as a class in the attributes, like which one wins, you know?
Oh, yeah.
Oh, yes, you need to do an add-on to your video, Matt.
Yeah, the what's the order of these? If you add it here, you get this. If you add it here, you get this. And a lot of us don't think about this. Like the thing about the editor, you mentioned earlier, is like we often don't go into our client's shoes. One, because it's actually hard to get inside our client's shoes, because we know what we know means that we can't unlearn what we know. So sometimes teaching a client how to use the Webflow designer or editor is quite hard because we know stuff that we imply that is known already, you know. But it'd be interesting to try and get inside the client's shoes of this kind of thing where. You know, I've had clients change the color of a container from nothing to blue and then complain that the whole site of like 200 pages has turned blue. It's like, well, this is why it's turned blue. And they, yeah, but I only did it in one place. It's like, yeah, okay, that's not how classes work. And, you know, that's maybe where like the Tailwind fan group need to come in and go, yeah, but, you know, if you use Tailwind, it wouldn't happen like that. And maybe, you know, people have said that using this class in attributes could lend itself to using something like Tailwind, because
that's what I was just thinking. Would that work, or would the link, because you have to add like, is that how you'd use Tailwind, is that you'd get their like CDN, or you get a script and you'd add it into the head? So would that work in the designer?
I think you'd get some of their features, like you wouldn't, like Tailwind have obviously some compiling and stuff in the background that makes it even cleverer, but you'd definitely be able to put more, like let's call them shorthand classes there, that they're utility classes essentially, aren't they? So and it won't bug up the styles in the Webflow UI, but then again it's like all you're doing is moving the problem somewhere else, maybe.
So I haven't fully tested it yet. It's on my list to do and test this class in attribute way of doing things. But there's an interesting take that potentially, you know, when you add classes in the normal class input field in Webflow, and you add multiple classes, they're subclasses, like they're joined together. Mm-hmm. If you inspect the CSS.
The combo class way,
but if you add a list of classes within the attribute, it's not a combo class, it's separate individual classes.
So it's like traditional normal
CSS
development. Wow,
yes.
That's a game changer.
That could be the secret superpower of attribute classes instead of the traditional class field, input field.
So that means that a load of us who are maybe started doing CSS before we discovered Webflow and could now revert to our old school way of understanding how that works. Yeah.
Yes.
But then you've got the, then you lose the ability to do a combo classes as well, don't you? Because, well, you, yeah.
Well, you just use the input field, the class input, to add combo classes. But I think there might be a way to do combo classes within the attribute field as well. You just need to add like a dot in between the classes. So if you put it all together.
But the thing is with combo classes is it's not the way it's written that it makes it a combo class. It's how the CSS in the CSS file is written that makes it a combo class. Because the styles are applied to that combination. Whereas if you write... Yeah, so there won't be a way that you can do it if you do it with the attributes, because you don't know what CSS gets written, do you? Because we don't have access to it.
I think you can, because the attribute name is class.
Yeah.
And then the value is the string of classes that you want to add. So you don't add each class individually. You add all the values together.
Oh, but so you are creating your own combo class, essentially.
You can do if you remove the space between classes.
But then you're creating one class. This is interesting. We need a visual square share screen here that somehow works on a podcast, but it doesn't.
But it is class. I have to stop saying class. But it is going to be super interesting to see what people do with this, because even just like, whatever, we're just talking about this for 15 minutes and we're seeing solutions and problems, and now it's getting... I like the way you, Alessia, said the traditional Webflow way. It's like, you know, this new tool, Webflow, for writing CSS is now a traditional way, and a progressive way, or a new way, which is the
traditional way of the CSS. Yeah, it's like going backwards.
Well, you say that. I listened to Adam Wathin, who created Tailwind, and they're around the Tailwind environment. There's a case of people can't write CSS; they can only write Tailwind.
And interesting,
it's the same way here. It's like we're writing CSS, but through the medium of Webflow. There's so many people don't understand how CSS works, but can build really beautiful websites using Webflow. Or, you know, Framer is even more removed again, because they have a different way of doing it. And it's so interesting that we've got these clans of community to people who are doing the same thing that people are experiencing on the front end in so many different ways, yet we're using the same technology, but half of us understand one half of it and the other half understand the other half, and only the old school people understand the real way that CSS works, you know? it's quite interesting.
But
sure, that's what the internet is like. That's what building on the internet is. There's so many different ways of so many JavaScript libraries and everything, you know. It's just, yeah, it ends up similar, ends up in a similar place, but the route that people take can be so many different. There's many ways to skin a cat. But what I'm just thinking there is like, how, if you were to go using in the custom element, add the class attribute to the custom attribute input, Where do you create your CSS classes? Like if you put them in, there's no, nothing has, they're just letters. Like
no,
there's nothing bound to that value. So can you create those values in Webflow visually the way we always do? Create those classes, have those classes sitting in your style guide.
And I then think add so. Them as, is so that that's kind of... that's why I still need to fully test it.
Yeah,
but I think there's two ways of adding the actual CSS, the code. So either on, you know, custom code, just in your editor, or like normally you do, like you style a class, like you have, you know, the background blue, and then you can just pull that class name into other elements with the attribute.
Yeah, it will be really interesting to see like how deep people go into this, because it particularly goes against, like, if you're thinking of like mast and client first, like deep stacking, and even like Webflow's approach to getting your templates on the market space.
Don't go there, Alan. Don't go there.
But they're all, they all like agree with one thing, is that you don't deep stack. You go two classes deep and then you nest. Whereas this could be, it'll just be interesting to see like what people do. I see it more
valuable with components, I think. Because like you say, oh, you're just adding a class. You can do so in the normal class input. So why do you need this? So yeah, the way that I would use it is probably with the components, because I do it at the moment with attributes and then I have to style the attribute, but I already have that CSS class that does the exact same thing. So now instead of having to define the attribute and what that looks like, I can just reuse the class that already exists and just inject it.
Yeah. And then my like clean HTML head is going to be like, are we going to have now class equals background color blue and then another key value pair that says class equals aligned?
No, because apparently you can have all of your classes within the same value.
Oh, gee. We know that Timothy Ricks, while we're recording this podcast, is recording 25 videos on this. But two, we also hope that Alessia is going to do one of her explainer videos as soon as we finish the podcast, and that will be out by the time we wake up tomorrow morning.
That's on the list. It's like, as soon as I finish this, I need to test that a class attribute, and then... combined with your video, Matt, because your needs to come out of where does which class is prioritized, background red and in the input class input, and you add background blue to the attribute, which one will come on top? So that's our homework.
You can't like in the custom attributes. A thing that I would like to see updated is that you can only edit from the CMS the whole input. Like you can't put in, if you had classes card, for example, and we made a card component, and then there was like tall card, small card, wide card as your combo classes or your addition, and you wanted that to be, you'd be able to edit that either from the CMS or from just your custom attributes fields. If you had class equals card and you wanted to put another class beside that from the CMS, from my understanding at the moment, is that that piece of text card would be replaced. It wouldn't be card plus the custom element. So I find it interesting where this is going to... are they allowing us, is there an additional update where you're now able to add your CMS to the value pair and not have to take on over the whole input? I'm just kind of thinking of all the things that I've come up against, and since I haven't tested it.
we're all talking about, like, If you listen to the podcast, Alan, when he's talking, is looking up to the left as if he's like this. He's imagining stuff above his head, like Homer Simpson style. I was like, what if I do this? and I'm, to be honest, I'm doing the same, except I'm not looking up because you're doing the looking up. So I'm imagining. But in my mind at the moment, I've got the Reloom. Like Reloom, I'm a bit fixated on Reloom at the moment. And guys, if you're listening, message us because we want to get you on the pod because there's so much to talk about. But it's stuff that, you know, I message Aline and Ben all the time. It's like Reloom are smashing it. They're like, you know, they've got a small team. They're moving so quickly. And obviously this week early last week, they launched this ability to take a site wireframe from Reloom.com into the Webflow project super quickly. And the fact you've got these little silent releases suggests that the stuff that Reloom are talking about, like, well, we're going to bring the ability to do styles in Reloom and bring them in, means that these little openings, these little like pathways open up the possibility of that happening on a utility level, you know? So imagine, like, Reloom can start, you know, and Reloom have launched their React stuff and they're using Tailwind. Reloom are going to have something down the line where you create all the styles in a visual canvas, so in your AI, and you, but I want it to be a red, purple, and yellow site about, you know, cakes. And then all of that is be utility classes that get fed into Webflow, into this custom class attribute place. And then there'll be some sort of two-way sync or one-way sync where you can change it in Reloom. And it, and Webflow, as Alien, as you said in the message the other day, Webflow become the hosting platform and Reloom becomes this sort of Squarespace-y, AI, drag-and-drop-y kind of editing platform. It's like super... It's not actually that far away if you think about it. And those these little things allow that to happen a lot more than before, where, you know, Webflow really couldn't use utility classes really because they'd be stacking them up so much that it would almost break the Webflow UI, whereas now maybe they can. So, super interesting, you know? Maybe, yeah. Like, where are Webflow going? Are they going super easy to use designer, or are they going to be like this dev centric side? It's just and Reloom
stuck in the middle.
Yeah, like
stuck in the middle.
But what's so interesting is actually sometimes you feel like Webflow move a little bit slower, but because there's such a big set of like people building around Webflow, whether it's the app ecosystem now or like Reloom obviously are doing a lot of work. Or Timothy Ricks, or you know, the stuff that Sam is doing there with components, is like they're moving quickly by unlocking integrations to their API rather than maybe moving quickly by updating the front end of the product, which, you know, unless you've worked in product teams and engineering, like, you probably don't appreciate how much work goes on to do all that stuff. And so fair play to them, you know, they're doing a lot of
stuff. When you have so many users, and most of them are quite opinionated, right? We all are.
No, we're not.
We all request.
I don't know how many users opinionated.
We all request things, right? So even as a product team, how do you prioritize all these small or big improvements? So that's a whole job in its own, and I think that's the whole point of, you know, the custom CSS that they add it in is also mainly to see, I believe, like, what are people using which is not already in the CSS panel, and it might be a way to just collecting data and then adding those like adding more options to the native Webflow CSS panel, or options that you can add in by saying what people add to the custom CSS. God, like, there's a lot of thinking, right, when you talk about all of the different options within the designer, trying to explain it the best I can.
There's so many, like you said there, like, there's so many different ways of using the tool. Like literally, the three of us are doing, we're at some stage, we're doing completely different things, even though we're all in Webflow.
Yeah.
Just the way we're approaching it, or just whatever projects we have on at that time.
Yeah.
And like the idea there just of the very simple update of a custom element. I've never added a canvas, you know?
Yeah.
And I remember your tweet, Alessia, you put out like, oh, guess what feature I'm using for my first custom element build? And like, no one could figure it out. And it was a range slider. Wasn't it a range slider you
ended up with? It was a range, yeah.
And did you build a custom range slider? And then did you use JavaScript to like make the, what was the output? Like, what ended up happening with that range slider? Was it a calculator? What were you building?
It was a calculator. It was, so one of our clients have this pricing page and they have lots of different options, but the way that they price is like per seats, for example.
Mm-hmm.
So they wanted an easy way to calculate, like, whoever is on the site just inputs the number of seats by dragging the range, and mm-hmm. then the price would update automatically. So you don't necessarily need the form because you're not submitting anything. You just need the range so that you can update the price. So I thought, oh, this is a perfect way to use the custom element, because otherwise I would have had to, well, just inject it. And a lot of the time, especially even if you're like filtering and stuff, you need to add the whole form, and then it adds lots of other divs. Well, with this one, in even input fields, they don't necessarily need the form wrapper if you're not submitting.
That's true. Yeah, you're right. Yeah. Okay, wow.
So I thought, oh, I'm removing like five other divs, because all I need is the range. I don't need everything else, because I'm just seeing what value the range has, and then, you know, multiply that by the price and then update the text. And it's a lot simpler.
Yeah, brilliant. Oh, that's so smart. Yeah, and you're right. Like, there's, you know, and this goes back to those like W classes, the Webflow class that Matt was talking about earlier, that there's so much power in the Webflow form. But sometimes all you want is an input field to be sitting there and hidden. You don't want it. You don't want to have to put in a form, so you can put in an input field and then give it a type hidden or a class of hidden. But the custom element allows you have that hidden input field now anywhere in your page or somewhere else, doing whatever you need it to do. And then one of the things that I've been using heaps with the custom element, and I've subsequently just realized is it makes it difficult to edit things on the editor, is the button. And kind of like what you were saying there, Leslie, about like removing the form. So the thing I love about HTMX is that it gives the power of a form to almost any element. So if you wanted to post something or get something, you don't, like the way you normally would have to do that is add a form, but this you don't. You can just have a div. You can just have a div and give it like the additional, add the correct attributes, and it'll do something. It'll post, it will, you know, delete stuff from, if you start connecting it to a backend.
And talking about forms and buttons, you know how the native Webflow submit button in forms, you can't add an icon or animate the icon because it sits in the background. But if you remove that and you add a custom element and have it as a submit button, then you can add an icon, you can add, and you can animate on hover and all those things that you can't do with the native submit button.
Yeah, that's amazing. Matt, you came up with some issues with me and you were having a bit of a back and forth on WhatsApp about, what did you come up against with
which, which day was this? No, sorry, which hour of which day was this? That we were having a
definitely. It would have been 15 minutes ago. We were probably texting each other during this podcast, giving out about them. But no, wasn't it, you came up with your icons weren't nesting in, or weren't
it was going in the right space. It was the same thing of like using radios and checkboxes. So I'm building this quiz, like exam, and using putting checkboxes in there that don't, we're not submitting it to anywhere. We're using JavaScript to test whether someone's checked the right box, add it to a tally, and we're moving on. So we're not submitting it anywhere. There's no form submission going on. And yeah, just when you create an input and then put a label, you can put a label in it, but then you can't edit the label. And then obviously, Ali and you were saying you should never put a label inside an input. You should always put a label next to an input as a sibling. And so, but it allows you to experiment with all this stuff. And like, yeah, there are bugs, like, you know, the button thing is a bug. You know, you can write text in it, but then you can't link it to a component. If you put an icon in there, it breaks it. That kind of breaks a component. You can't edit.
So this is more the, just to kind of explain, the traditional way of creating like a custom button in Webflow is that you have your a link block, and then you add like a text block, and then you add an image block beside it.
Yeah.
So, but in the custom element, you can add a button tag, but there's a text field, and you can say button or click here.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And then if you want to add an image beside that, you can nest an image inside that, but now you can no longer edit the text field.
Yeah, sorry, that was it.
I usually add a text inside of the custom element.
Yeah, so this is the argument that me and Matt were having, is I was just like, oh man, just chill out, just add your text field, put your image beside it. And he's like, but that's not the correct way of writing the HTML. And I'm like, yeah, it is, but we've been talking about this for 45 minutes. This is like, you should see our WhatsApps. It's just like 45 minutes talking about a text field.
It's normally it's normally me grumbling, Aline going, yeah, but you can do it this way, just get on with it. And then about 45 minutes later, I'm just going, okay, I'm just going to get on with it. I've just wasted 45 minutes of my life arguing about it. And that's kind of like, yeah. So there are elements of that still in the custom element. And I think because they're breaking new ground, they're doing it in a way that's pretty quick. But sometimes they miss the... I actually discovered a real bug the other day, which actually crashed my whole thing. And I submitted it to Webflow. And one thing, fair play, I hadn't done a lot of submissions of errors and bugs to Webflow before. And I've told the guys this, one, because I couldn't really find a form on the site that allowed me to submit a bug. It was more about feedback. And anyway, that's a separate point. But I submitted it, and on three separate tickets, I got replies within 2 or 3 hours, depending on what time of day. Like if I submitted it early in the morning, it came from their European team. And then I had some coming from New Zealand, like when it was super early or super late, and then the US. But every time they like read back the problem, gave me a solution, recorded a loom and told me what was happening, and then followed up 3 or 4 days later with the outcome from it. And it's pretty amazing, because I think they went through a period where their support was a little bit flaky. But it seems like they're back on track and they're really listening to people now. So it's pretty cool. But yeah, that was one of the issues I had, was like, I want to do this and I can't do it. And I was being very idealistic about it and, yeah, getting my knickers in a twist, as they say.
But at the end of the day, though, you were right. Like, your point was right. It's just like... And actually, it was the... When you recorded that video for me... So if we can just explain what the bug was, it was that when you created a custom element... Sorry, a button. Custom element button. And then turned that into a component. And didn't have a text field in there.
Yeah.
You could connect that text input to the component so that you could edit it. But if you put an image beside that and then tried to connect the text to that text input field, the site crashed. The Webflow designer crashed.
Yeah.
And that was a proper bug. And that this is what you're saying about you sent that into Webflow and they were really, really quick with a response. And they're... Yeah, so that was very fair.
But I was being the really annoying mystery shopper who went looking for
looking for bugs.
Sometimes it feels like I am, because sometimes it feels like I wasn't looking for a bug, but for some reason I've put something in place that feels like it shouldn't be a bug, but it is a bug. So yeah, but fair play.
Did you even need to make a button that day?
Just for fun, just to test.
Just for fun. Yeah, just so I could submit a ticket and complain to Aline and Ben on the... Ben's gone a bit quiet now because he's off gallivanting in sunny climes, whereas Aline and I are in like rain-covered offices going, this doesn't work anymore, and we're happy to complain to each other. Whereas Ben's obviously on a beach somewhere. He doesn't care. He's like, just let him argue. So
he's just living off his really good SEO... data traffic from...
Don't start me. Ben's based in Dublin. He's grabbing all the Irish business, but yet he hasn't been in Ireland for about 5 years. Like, come on.
He's Irish Ben.
Irish Ben. Sorry, Ben. I know. Yeah, you've done all the hard work. So. Anyway,
right, we've jealous there, Matt.
Well,
we're just on a roast, Matt.
And yeah, I shouldn't be complaining because I'm not even Irish anyway. So I just, you know.
It's okay. When you come to London, when you come to London at the meetups, everyone is like, is that Matt? So you get him that way, right?
Yeah. Where was Ben then? You know, where was Ben? No one recognised Ben, you know? No. Here's Irish Ben, but Aline, you're the only one who calls him Irish Ben, to be fair. So.
He is Irish Ben.
He is Irish Ben, yeah. Yeah, no.
Everyone's probably like, who are they?
Anyway, Alessia, what have you got coming up in the next couple of weeks? You got any more, I was talking before, like your PR tour to do a few more videos, a few more speeches? Because you did a speech at the, I call it a speech, sorry, a talk. A speech sounds like you're on a big platform, but a talk at the Webflow meetup.
Yes, I did.
Yeah. What was that on, by the way, for those that weren't there, which is probably the majority of people listening?
It was a talk about how to continue collaborating with your clients. So one of the things I found was that a lot of freelancers or a lot of agencies kind of, they do the project, they hand it off to the client, and then it finishes there. So what it means is that they keep having to look for the next client and the next project. Well, we've been working with clients for years, some of them on a monthly basis, just as a retainer, and some of them just on project basis, but for some reason they keep coming back. So it was a talk about how to maintain that relationship with clients and how to make them come back to you. And I've recorded the video, and Jack recorded it as well. So it might come out of on YouTube for anyone who wants to watch it as well.
That is awesome. It's something that I've come up recently, actually, is that I've worked with a client, really enjoyed the project. And there's a little sticky point between the whole sort of, right, this is what I quoted you for the project, and we've delivered on this. And, you know, things flex as you go, don't they? Because, you know, the scope changes a bit and you add bits here, and you sometimes you absorb that cost and time because you feel like maybe you didn't, you weren't thinking about that at the start. And then you have that little time when they go, all right, can we work with you ongoing if we need any changes? And you go, yeah, I have a retainer, and you can give them the retainer options. But in that little between finishing a project and the retainer, there's all the sort of stuff, all the questions that come out of the woodwork that you tried to cover in a handover, but you can't cover everything. And it's related to the project that you did. So it's not related to new stuff. It's related to, oh, how do I change this? Like the editor stuff. Like, how do I use the editor? How do I change this component? And all this kind of stuff. That is such a gray area of, do I charge for this? Or is it part of my project fee? Or is it, should I put them onto a retainer? And that could be the first 10 hours of the retainer. And it's often, because it's quite an awkward time, isn't it, almost? It's like, project done, live, final payment done. And then the next 2 weeks is loads of questions like, well, it's kind of, this is done now. Like, you know, if you want to pay me for some more advice, then you can pay me. But you feel really bad because it's related to the work that you've done. And it's, I don't know, how do you deal with that? For, say, not a long-term client, but maybe a client that you've just started the first project for, you know?
Yeah. Well, from the start, so even from the proposal, so even before we start working together, I kind of list out everything that we offer. So obviously the quote for the actual project, what's included in the training. So there's like a checklist of things that we cover during the training. And then we say, if you want additional training or more in-depth training, here's the fee. And then we also do list out, you know, the retainers and subscriptions and ongoing maintenance and stuff that we offer. So from the get-go, they already know kind of everything, even after the project has been finished. And when they come back asking lots of questions, I think it's more just validating what they're asking. Like if they're asking something that I was like, oh, yes, that should have been covered in the training and I didn't tell them, then I just answer. But if all of a sudden they're like, these classes, Matt, how are these structured? And, you know, what is HTML and what is CSS and all these other questions that you can say.
About adding the class element to the custom element.
Yeah, tell me more about that. So then that would be... you know, additional in-depth training because it wasn't listed in the original, you know, training session that it was agreed up front. So that's one way of maybe limiting how much time you spend answering all these questions.
Yeah, the transparency, I suppose. The transparency up front means that everyone's on the same page before they get asked the question, instead of having that awkward, I should have told you about this extra little bit of extra training cost, you know, that you roll into. Yeah, yeah, that makes sense.
And then we also have 3 months warranty, so if any bugs come out, we will just fix them. And bug.
A bug isn't a change in scope. Because I had one recently where it was like, build a set of components, and then there was a, can we make the component do something different? And although it was a relatively quick fix, because I was busy with other projects, I kind of had to stand my ground a little bit and go, yeah, that's an extra feature, not an extra part of the scope, not a bug of the component not being able to do this. And it was, it was understood. When you're up front and transparent and communicate it well, then the client is very rarely, you know, angry or disappointed. In fact, it's probably a red flag to not stick them on a retainer if they do get angry and arsey about you, like, charging for your time. So, yeah. So I guess it works both ways, yeah. Yeah. So, well, we're
that's a good one, the 3 months guarantee and definition of a bug.
Yeah. Because it happens to everyone that maybe, I don't know, the one field in the CMS wasn't linked and therefore it's not changing, or, you know, like those details that maybe slip through QA, quality assurance and testing. And then it's only once you start adding, you know, all the content and adding all the CMS items and adding like everything that the site needs that you realize, oh yeah, like it's 2 second fix. I just need to link those two together. But at least it's like, I think it's peace of mind on both sides, because at least I know, oh, if I forgot anything, they know that I'll be able to fix it and I'll fix it straight away. And on their side, they're also like, oh, if anything doesn't work, they'll fix it. So it's nice, on less pressure on both sides, I find.
Yeah, I see. One thing I used to do with the training side was record videos, a load of videos that, well, had a generic feel, but also had a bit more of a bespoke feel to that project. And I found sometimes clients didn't watch any of them. You know, you stick them on Loom and it's like, I've recorded 27 videos and they've watched 5 minutes of the first one and probably got bored because it's gone over their head, or I haven't explained it properly, or whatever the reason might be. And then they default to asking on Slack, and you know you've covered it, but they haven't watched the video, so you know they haven't seen what you've covered.
Do you send them the link? Just watch this.
Well, I'm in two minds at the moment, because like, the more long-term clients you work with, the more you feel comfortable recording stuff that they'll watch, because you feel like there's an investment that you make is going to pay dividends over the longer term. It's when you have a short-term sort of, you know, Figma to Webflow, they want to get it out quick. It's a relatively small amount. And then you push them towards maybe Webflow University, because Webflow University is such a good source of information. But it's like, where do you start? They don't need to go through the whole Webflow University, because it's so much stuff in there. So I don't know, there might be a little bit of a room to create like a little dashboard and bring in, like, drag in the right Webflow University videos, supplement it with your videos, and before you know it, you've got this like kick-ass education platform that feels really bespoke for your client. And then if they haven't watched all of them five times and still need your help, then you can charge them money for it, you know. So
what I do is I go through the site live with them on the call and record the call.
That's clever. Yeah.
So I can, they need like minimum one member of the team. It could be the whole team, it could be like whatever. And then I go through all the items screen sharing with their site, so it's bespoke to them, and record the whole session. And then that way they get to ask questions while, you know, I'm going through the site. And it also, if anything is not clear, maybe, like I said, like it goes over their head or something, you can kind of see it from their faces, right, while you're speaking. So it's like, oh, is that not clear? Or you can also test their level of, you know, technical knowledge. Do you know HTML, CSS? Yes. Okay, great. This is the HTML. This is the CSS. They get it. But if they say no, then you kind of tweak the tutorial slightly just to get them to their level and then maybe explain it, the basics of classes and CSS and things like that. So I always find it's nice to have it live. And then I record the whole session so they can share with their team, or they can rewatch it whenever they want and they kind of have it.
Yeah, that's a fail-safe way to do it, isn't it? So it's
that's nice. That's nice. It, because it does the work that you were trying to do there, Matt. Custom experience, but then they can lead it, or it can end up being but it's always good to have face-to-face like meetings where, I know they're digital, but when you're with your client, it's always good to sign off working together. That's a nice approach.
I do get a little bit confused when there's a lot of talk about, you know, especially around these unlimited subscriptions, you know, that we all love to hate or hate to love, is depending on how you look at it, is we don't have any calls. It's like what are we in the business of, being robots, or are we in the business of client servicing? And like, having calls for me is part of the joy of working in this industry. It's like speaking to clients, educating them, understanding what they want to do, like challenging yourself to solve their problems. And that sounds all a little bit like airy fairy cliche, like, oh, lovey dovey, but essentially, like, those contact points allow you to transfer that value that you can't do on a Slack message or even a Loom video or something. So it's a good opportunity then to do that sort of just be human together, yeah, as they say.
Yeah. And I mean, I don't have that many calls with our retainer clients, to be fair. We have like our monthly catch up, and then we just live on Slack, and it's just like Slack messages. And it kind of works for our team and their team. And I mean, everyone is online all the time anyway. And then as soon as it becomes, you know, 2-3 Slack messages back and forth being like, no, this element, no, that, like, it's like, okay, let's just jump on a huddle in Slack. And it's like a 5-minute huddle, sorted, done. So yeah, it's nice to have the option.
Yeah, very true. But Alan, how, like, you're the host today, so how are we going with time? Do we,
I'm almost like hesitant to keep asking questions, because I'd rather just get you back on, Alessia, and get you to talk about that whole topic. And, you know, because we went deep here into the custom element, and like, I think we speculated a lot more than I thought we would. But I like your approach, and I'd find it fascinating to, I don't know, maybe just go over the chat and explore that further. Because like, literally, we could keep going for another hour the way we're going. So if you're up for that, and maybe like after you guys release it, and maybe in a month's time or 2 months' time, we could get you back on and talk more about that. Or maybe there's some other amazing topic that we need to talk about. But I'd be keen for that, because literally I could see us staying here till 7 o'clock tonight nerding out about different things.
Yeah, I'd love that. Yeah, I'd love to come again. I mean, we could also keep recording and then you cut it into separate episodes.
That involves editing. Come on, Alessia.
Oh, we don't do that, no.
It would just be a 3-hour podcast. We'd have to listen to it.
I'll come back then.
Editing, like...
What is that?
I think we need to... Maybe Matt and I need to record videos for each other and how to...
we've already been over the, like, hey, we need to get an editor, and then we get the price of the editor comes in, and we're like, Oh, maybe we have to do it ourselves then, because it costs too much. And then you realize that editors are very skillful people, and, you know, it's like someone comes to you and go, oh, can you do me a Webflow site for $50? That's essentially what we've been doing with editors. Like, realize that, okay, maybe we just don't edit anything and we just go live with everything that we recorded, and that's what we're doing. So,
oh, is that what we've fully agreed? No more editors.
No more editing.
Ever again.
Yeah, anyway.
Yeah.
Right, so yeah, let's do that. Let's get you on again, and we'll pick another subject where we can talk about it so Alan can imagine what he's talking about up in his Homer Simpson cloud. And
maybe I'll just start getting some like AI backgrounds that anytime I look up there, it'll just be like a little bird floating around in a cloud.
You can edit it in.
Oh, we need an animator now.
Well, the amount of times you do it, I don't think we need an animator. We just need someone to stick it on Photoshop so it's permanently on there. Like, that's just, yeah. So.
Maybe I can just draw it in the background.
Yeah, draw it on your wall. Anyway, Alessia, thanks very much for coming on and just having a chinwag. We really appreciate it. And like, hopefully we'll try and get over in October. Otherwise, we'll get you over for this West Coast Claire Webflow retreat that we keep talking about. You know,
the Webflow surf retreat.
Retreat, yeah.
Oh, actually, that was one of my questions. Did you go surfing, Matt?
He hasn't got down yet. No, that's primarily my fault.
Aline down.
Life got
a date.
Busy with the lead up to this wedding.
Oh, it's just like, it's like trying to pin a tail on a donkey, and that donkey is moving really, really quickly. It's like trying to nail Aline down on A, recording a podcast, but B, getting one day I'm going to turn up, and it's like, Aline, I'm here. It's like, all right, let's just go surfing. Yeah,
and a Simon Hub, just come down.
Yeah, but who knows where you'll be? You'll be on a flight somewhere to New York or Northampton, or actually, no, Munster are out of the cup now.
All the beautiful places, Northampton and New York.
Won't be doing that. Anyway, should we wrap it up?
All right. We should. Alessia, that was class. Thanks very much. Yeah, it was great to see you. Raging that I didn't get over for the web fail and see everybody over there and hang out with you and everybody who's over in London. But it was good to talk to you now. And yeah, we'll get you back on and talk more shite about some Webflow stuff.
Great. Looking forward to it. Thanks.
Okay. Bye. Good luck.
Bye-bye. Bye-bye.